Welcome to Hungry Dads, a couple of guys who started a podcast as an excuse to bring snack food into the house. On this week's show...
Hiroshi stands out, no.
Bob Bark, you can do whatever you want to.
It might get oiled up every so often.
Kind of controversial when it started out.
What is going on?
Hello and welcome to episode 72 of the Hungry Dads podcast. I'm Rod Budget.
I'm Hugh Gallen.
And tonight, folks, we are straying a bit from the Hungry Dads' usual food snacking cultural realm into the world of TV. It's kind of in the same genre of being a dad and growing older and not getting to watch the abundant amounts of TV maybe we did in the past when we had more freedom. We're going to talk about The Simpsons, which has aired for 27 consecutive seasons, believe it or not. Saturday Night Live, which has aired for 41 seasons. And last but not least, The Price is Right, which has aired for 44 seasons. Three pretty different genres. I think it'll be interesting to see what has made them so unique and withstand the test of time.
Yeah, the only thing I'll add is that these are shows that not only can brag longevity, but because of their longevity, they've spanned our lives really from youth into fatherhood. So it's something that we could compare very capably from how we enjoyed it in our younger days when we were more free to watch as much as we wanted to now where time and television time is a commodity.
Honestly, I think what has made these three shows stand out and be so successful is, for the most part, they've stayed very true to their form. There have been some evolution along the way, but I think character-wise and kind of philosophy-wise, they've been able to stay true to what they were when they started. I also think all three of them were genre-breaking shows. They kind of created a whole new genre, which when you're talking about something that's going to be on air for 20, 30, 40 years, that's kind of what it takes. So we're going to start with The Simpsons, and if you're not familiar with The Simpsons, I suggest just skipping ahead to Saturday Night Live or The Price is Right. Hopefully you've heard of The Simpsons or watched it. I think most people have. It's an animated series, kind of controversial when it started out, which I want to touch on a little bit. Not as controversial anymore, but it was really kind of the first animated comedy that caught on in prime time and became a huge smash hit.
Most people of our generation, maybe you weren't necessarily a fan, but it's pretty much integrated into your life, into your minds. You know, everyone probably has an opinion on it, whether they watched it or not. Most young men who are currently in their 30s had a period of their life where they watched the show religiously.
For me personally, I watched it pretty regularly. I'd say up through 2005, 2006. I have the DVDs of the earlier seasons. I think I've seen every episode through that time. As I got married and started having kids, I really don't catch it very often at all anymore.
I feel like this is a common story with The Simpsons specifically. It's something that so many people were fanatical about for so long, and then, I don't want to say all of a sudden, but then eventually part of everyone's story is, I stopped watching it. And some people say it's because it stopped being good. And I guess one thing we want to address here is that true? Did it stop being good? And then to that point, how could we know if we stopped watching it?
Right. And I think that's going to be a theme of the show right there is, like you said, with all three of these shows, I feel like they have very strong, passionate fan bases. And I think with all three of them, you now have people who are saying, well, it's not as good as it used to be. And I think with all three of these shows, we want to explore, at least in our opinions, is that true? Is it not true? Are some of these even better than they used to be? Starting with The Simpsons, we watched one of our favorite episodes. Hugh and I talked about, you know, what is a favorite episode? And we came up with one from 1997, Grade School Confidential, a classic episode. The main theme is Mrs. Krabappel, Bart's teacher, and Principal Skinner fall in love at Martin's birthday party. They have a forbidden love, and Superintendent Chalmers catches wind and tries to put an end to it because it's against district policy, and things kind of go from there. It's got some hilarious scenes, some hilarious characters, obviously, but we went back and watched that just to see if it's as funny as I remembered it. And then compare it with a few of the more current episodes to kind of compare and contrast.
All right. So first thing first, Rod, Grade School Confidential. You watched it again. Did you find it as funny as you ever did?
I found it almost as funny as I ever did. And I think that I can apply that across The Simpsons. I think some of the humor appealed to a younger sort of demographic, as you said. I think it's kind of young guy humor. Certain scenes, they still just crack me up. And especially in this episode, I've seen them probably 30, 40 times, and I'll still laugh out loud. In general, though, I feel like they're not as funny, and maybe it's because I've seen them so much.
I've heard that there's arguably nothing less interesting or funny than analyzing comedy. But here we are. The thing I struggled with when watching was I was definitely laughing. I was legitimately laughing. And the thing I truly can't answer because I'm on the inside is whether it was genuinely because I thought it was still funny or parts of like nostalgia humor, like almost Pavlovian response to these jokes. I've heard them so many times. I know they're funny. It feels good to hear them. And so I laughed, and I laughed hard, and I laughed good at these jokes that I've heard so many times from characters that I love. One of the scenes specifically that made me laugh out loud, and I think we'll play a clip, and it's actually we'll just go ahead and play it. It's Ralph talking to his dad about what it is he saw Mrs. Krabappel and Principal Skinner doing.
Mrs. Krabappel and Principal Skinner were in the closet making babies, and I saw one of the babies, and the baby looked at me.
Baby looked at you?
Classic Ralph, and I think the funniest part for me is Chief Wiggum saying, the baby looked at you?
The baby looked at you, exactly. It nails every character. It's so absurd.
For those of you who are less familiar, Ralph Wiggum is basically in Bart's grade, but he's a baby.
He's got a child.
He has the personality of a baby, a child. So my favorite scene from this episode is probably my favorite scene from the entire series. It's a pretty classic one. A lot of people like it.
Excuse me, Edna. I don't think we're talking about love here. We're talking about S-E-X in front of the C-H-I-L-D-R-E-N.
Sex cauldron? I thought they closed that place down.
So the sex cauldron line, that is Krusty the Clown, which first of all, it's absurd that he's even there.
Yes, exactly. And he's only there for that joke, but that's the great thing. Everyone in this town is just there when they need to be there.
And it's not even close to sex cauldron. That's C-H-I-L-D-R-E-N. It's not close to cauldron. And last but not least, sex cauldron, you assume it's some sort of strip club, but it could be worse than that. You never really know. They never really say what it's supposed to be.
So we watch this old episode and we dredge up all these good feelings of both nostalgia and or just legitimate funny moments. And then compare that to, I watched a new episode. Did you watch Fland Canyon?
I did watch Fland Canyon, as a matter of fact.
So Fland Canyon is a 2016 episode. And the description might as well be a 1992 or 93 episode.
Exactly.
The Simpsons and his neighbors, the Flanders, they go to the Grand Canyon together. And hijinks ensue. My instant reaction to this episode is that it was funny. It had funny moments, definitely enjoyable. Very little to criticize that. I thought it was true to the characters, and it had, you know, the pacing of The Simpsons where not necessarily a joke a minute, but characters kind of driving the humor. But I can't muster up enthusiasm to say I was pleasantly surprised at how much I enjoyed it. I still felt like I had a distance from it.
I mean, I think I agree with most of what you said. I don't have that kind of passion for it anymore, but yeah, it was a good episode. I found it funny. And like you said, I found it pleasing, I guess, that it's still the same characters, still kind of the same routine. Flanders is still perfect. Like you said, it could have been from the early 90s. So I guess my conclusion on The Simpsons is it's probably just as funny as it ever was. I just don't have the personal attachment to it because I can't watch it every week. And maybe some of the humor appeals to a younger crowd, I think it's meant to. So maybe it's not quite as funny, but I still think it's going pretty strong. And
yeah, so Rod, let's say you had an hour or 2 hours to watch The Simpsons, and The Simpsons is the only thing you could watch, and you could either pick randomly four episodes you've never seen, newer episodes, or you could pick, you know, maybe not your four favorite, but four older episodes that you know you're going to enjoy. What would you pick?
I would go with new episodes, I think. I think I've seen the older episodes enough that even though I enjoy them, and I haven't watched them in a long time, even though I own them, I would still be interested enough, I think, to check out the new stuff. Not necessarily expecting to laugh more or think they're funnier. A lot of it would just be curiosity.
Yeah, I think that's my answer, too. And I suppose for me, that indicates that these new episodes are still good. They are still funny. Because if these new episodes we watched were atrocious, we'd be saying to ourselves, I'd just rather watch the old stuff. It's Saturday Night Live. Moving on to another institution of a television program, Saturday Night Live. Maybe even more so than The Simpsons, I feel like emotions and feelings and opinions run very strong on Saturday Night Live. And I think most of the sentiment you hear is, it's not as funny as it used to be. And it doesn't matter whether that person is in their 30s or 40s or 50s, that's what they say. But what's interesting is, what I think is, they're all referring to a different era of what it used to be to them. I think that there's a certain group of people that say it's never as funny as when it was John Belushi, and then there's another group of people who say it's never as funny as it was with John Lovitz and Dana Carvey, and then there's a whole contingent, it's never as funny as it was with Adam Sandler, it's never as funny as it was with Will Ferrell, it was never as funny as it was with Tina Fey, it's never as funny as it was with Adam Sandberg, etc., etc., etc. And I think all these people are well-meaning when they say it, but the point being, I'm going to call it out and say the show is always been as good or as bad as it's always been.
That's deep. Wow.
So it'll be because the show, by its very nature, within every episode, is just, it's always hit or miss. I mean, you can come up with your own percentage, Rod. I don't know how much you have watched or do watch, but, you know, do you feel like, what percentage would you say Saturday Night Live hits versus misses? Any personal estimates?
Well, I think it does depend on the cast and the years and the crew. I'm going to disagree with you a little bit. I think there are higher hit rates. I do agree with you that there's no episode where every single sketch is hilarious. And here's my main theory on Saturday Night Live. I do think there was a golden era. And again, you're going to say it's because that's when I was, you know, of age and that's when I was watching it. But I have some data to back me up. I think the early 90s, I guess late 80s to early to mid 90s, there was an absolute all-star cast, and they meshed. They were extremely talented people. Phil Hartman, Adam Sandler, Chris Farley. Tina Fey was a writer. She wasn't on the show yet. You know, even Kevin Nealon I liked a lot on Weekend Update, which maybe is a point against me because a lot of people didn't like him. Dana Carvey. You've got to admit that was a pretty star-studded cast. And a couple of data points. If you watch any of these top 10 funniest SNL sketches, which are done across a lot of media, VH1 did one, and they're on the internet now, almost always 6 or 7 of them are from that era. I think the hit rate was a lot higher back then, and I don't think it's as funny as it used to be. I'll just come out and say it. There's more misses. They're still hits. They're still very funny things. I'm not going to say it's never funny. I just think they had a much higher success rate back in that era.
Yeah, it might just be by consolidation of time, though, because I do think you just described a very large chunk of time. I mean, you start with, you know, Carvey and Hartman, and some of those did run a long time, but then you end talking about Adam Sandler. That can be a 10-year span, and
yeah,
you know, and Farley.
That's true.
And if you take a 10-year span, you could pick out, you know, that's a solid third of the show's history, quarter of the show's history.
I don't know, 2006 to 2016, who are you going to pick out?
Oh, well, I mean, look, I think Jimmy Fallon is a legitimate talent.
No, I hate Jimmy
Fallon.
Oh,
see, all right, well, there we're going to disagree.
Yeah. Jimmy Fallon, the guy who laughs at his own
He does laugh
every
at
single time.
A lot, and he used to drive me nuts for it, and I don't know why. It's just because he's so darn charming. So I was going to try this exercise. Let's see if it works. You know, there's been a million lists of who the best cast member is, and actually, I think Rolling Stone did, look, like it or don't like it, they did every cast member and ranked them, and I think at the very least, right or wrong, I think it was a very good discussion point, but I want to do it just a little bit differently. Let's see what this yields. Rod, you sort of just did it, but just off the top of your head, name 5 cast members you consider excellent. Stick to 5, and then I'm going to do 5 in addition. Based on their SNL career, not based on their broader career, just on their SNL work.
Phil Hartman. Dana Carvey. Eddie Murphy. Chris Farley. I'm sure I'm forgetting all sorts of people. I guess Adam Sandler.
If I were to do 5, it would include those, but I'm going to do ones that you didn't mention. It would include a lot of those. I mean, Dana Carvey definitely comes to mind. I don't think I would have gone for Murphy or I probably would have included Sandler and Carvey, but just to mix it up a little bit, let me put Tina Fey in there. She's great. I know you like Tina Fey too, so
I'm a Tina Fey fan.
I like Andy Samberg. I know he's a latter-day guy.
Horatio Sanz actually was a dark horse.
Oh, Horatio Sanz, oh no, I did not think he was funny at all. I think
no.
He's a nice
See,
enough
this
guy.
Is why it's so, why it's so
we
divisive.
Might have different tastes. I have a very granular question for you here. Do you have any opinions, because I do, on the moment where they say, live from New York, it's Saturday night, whether or not they should yell it out of character or whether they should say it in character? Do you know what I mean? So they're doing the sketch and they're playing whoever. They're playing Bill Clinton. And at a certain point, the one playing Bill Clinton goes, And one more thing, live from New York, it's Saturday night, and some of the players do it in character, and some just break character and yell it out. Do you have a preference? Because I have a very strong opinion on it.
I have a feeling we're going to disagree for some reason, but I think you should break character.
I actually agree. I think you need to break character and yell. And
that's the whole bit, I think.
When I was young, I hated it. Dana Carvey always broke character. He'd be doing his Bush thing, and it was so funny. And then he'd go, live from New York, it's Saturday night. And I hated it because I wanted to see more Bush.
But that's kind of the whole bit. You're breaking from the character, and the show's starting.
Yeah, and contrastingly, Daryl Hammond always does it in character. He'll be doing his Trump or his Bill Clinton, and he'll continue to do it in character. And I don't think it's as funny, and I don't think it conveys the same kind of excitement. What I've heard from a lot of cast members in interviews is that first time they get to say it, it's very exciting, and Dana Carvey said every time he got to say it, he got that excited. And I feel like it conveys the excitement. To do it in character, I think underplays it a little bit too much and kind of leads me to believe that that actor thinks they're a little too cool for the show. And no one's too cool for that show. Did you watch a new episode, one of the newer episodes?
I did watch a newer episode, a couple of them. I didn't watch the full episodes. I watched some bits and pieces of several episodes. And like you said, there were some hits and some misses. I just feel like there were more misses than there used to be from what I remember, but I was younger back when I was watching it more. So again, that might be the reason.
One of the more recent ones I watched, interestingly, had the hosts Tina Fey and Amy Poehler. I don't know if you saw that one. That one was actually interesting to watch because in that same episode, you could kind of compare the generations even a little bit. It was the new cast with an old, not a super old, but an oldish cast member. And, you know, there was definitely a sense that Tina Fey and Amy Poehler were esteemed amongst that cast, and it kind of showed. What I thought was good was that it was a lot of callbacks to the olden days, but not completely callbacks to the olden days. Like, there was still new humor in the voice of the new cast, and Tina Fey and Amy Poehler kind of played into that. I found them very funny, found the whole thing very funny. One thing I didn't find funny, and again, this just goes to taste, Maya Rudolph came back and did a couple guest spots, and I don't find Maya Rudolph that funny. Sure, she's a nice lady, not to my taste whatsoever.
We agree on that.
Complete miss there.
They also brought back Church Chat recently, I know, Dana Carvey.
Yeah, I felt underwhelmed when they brought back Church Chat, to be honest. The nostalgia of me wanted to get very excited, but...
Well, I think a lot of these character-based sketches, they get a big hit on the first one, and they try to, like, obviously, like, extend it out.
Yeah.
The second one's not quite as funny, and then by the third or fourth one, it's like, all right, we get the joke, and it's not funny anymore, which I think kind of happened there. Which brings me to a little bit of trivia. I got some SNL trivia for you. Concerning, as we were just talking about, you know, when they have a character who's a big hit, they keep kind of playing it out as far as it will go, and sometimes even all the way to the box office. So, Hugh Gallen, do you know how many movies have been made from Saturday Night Live characters?
More than you would think. I'm just going to start listing some as quickly as I can.
Wow, you're going to list them.
The Roxbury guys, Pat, Wayne and Garth. I should be able to do more than that.
I'll give you a hint. There actually were less than I thought there would be.
Yeah, it's funny. Now that I'm trying to count them, it does seem... But Tim Meadows character did one. The ladies man. I think I'm up to maybe five now. Boy, maybe it isn't as many as I thought. The Stuart Smalley had a movie.
Yep, you're doing a good job.
I'm up to six. I think I'm missing some very obvious ones. Did Adam Sandler's character?
You're missing a few older ones.
Yeah, a few old ones. Like,
well, there's only one.
Like the Blues Brothers did
Blues
a movie.
Brothers, boom. And Blues Brothers 2000.
Okay, so if we're counting sequels, then we have Wayne's World 2, obviously,
exactly.
As well. The Coneheads would be like eight or nine.
I think there's one more. There's 10.
Who did I miss?
My Superstar.
Superstar. I missed Superstar. Okay, yeah,
that's
10.
Impressive, though. That's
10.
Extremely impressive.
Yeah,
wow. And do you have any guess as to what the highest grossing and highest rated one is, according to Rotten Tomatoes?
Wayne's World would have to take that one.
Which one is by far the lowest rated, and there are a lot of bad movies on here, with an 11% score on Rotten Tomatoes?
Oh, jeez. Let's see. The Stuart Smalley one comes right to mind. I'm going to think about the Roxbury one as a possible tie, but I'm going to stick with Stuart Smalley.
There are a lot of low ones, so It's actually the ladies' man.
Ladies? Oh, really? See, that's disappointing.
The other interesting thing is these were all made between 92 and 2000, except for the Blues Brothers.
Yeah, they really original. Tried to crank them out.
I think they cut bait. They cut bait after the ladies' man.
Talk about Weekend Update really quick. I think that segment, even in a bad episode, it'll tend to be utterly watchable. Even a bad Weekend Update is better than most of the sketches, and if you can get yourself the Weekend Update, you can usually convince yourself it was a worthwhile experience just to watch the show. I don't know.
I think there have been some bad, like, Weekend Update kind of guests. They break in and do, like, a side sketch. I think some of those have been a little cringeworthy. But in general, I agree. I think it's the most enjoyable part of the show for me. It's kind of current events and smart writing, kind of quick, snappy stuff. Things like The Daily Show and The Colbert Report, kind of, they're almost whole shows that evolved out of that kind of current news, making fun of it segment. But Weekend Update has been doing it forever. Like I said, I always liked Kevin Nealon. Nobody else liked him, but I thought he was like a really straight, he's like a straight character delivering like obviously absurd news, but he wouldn't break character and just be very serious about it, which I always found to be really funny.
This is what always happens to me with Saturday Night Live, is that they bring on a new cast member and I frankly can't stand them. And they make my skin crawl and I don't think they're funny and I feel like they're posers. And then just by the time they hang around two or three seasons, I can't deny that they make me laugh. And then by the time they're ready to leave, I'm a legitimate fan of theirs. It happened with Bill Hader. I used to think he was the least funny guy in the world. And then by the time he was leaving, I'm just the biggest Bill Hader fan. And part of it is I think that that you got to get to know them. And the other part of it is they do get funnier. They start out very green and pretty unfunny, and then they grow into the role for the most part. I was that way with Andy Samberg. I was just like, who is this dope trying to be Adam Sandler? And then by the end of it, I mean, I was in love with him. Jimmy Fallon too. Like, he's just a guy. He laughs at his own jokes and thinks he's so cute. And by the end of it, I'm a big Jimmy Fallon fan. So
you're just a big sucker.
I'm a big sucker for the show. You're absolutely right.
And last but not least, entering their 45th season next year will be The Price is Right. I'm a big Price is Right fan. I grew up watching it with my family, my grandparents. I think, like a lot of people did, it's been on forever, seemingly. It's another groundbreaking show. And really, when you talk about The Price is Right, there are two eras. There's the Bob Barker era and then the Drew Carey era. Drew Carey came on board in 2007 when Mr. Barker retired. Honestly, I could not stand Drew Carey hosting The Price is Right the first few times I saw him. In fact, the first time I saw him, I was like, I may not watch this again. He's so bad. He's gotten a lot better. So I think it was a couple of things. I think I was just too hard on him in general. He's replacing a legend. He was probably nervous. It's hard to kind of come in. It's a completely different hosting a game show and a live game show. That
it's a complicated game show.
Yeah, only one person had ever done, and you're gonna run into all sorts of idiots like every day coming on, not knowing what to do, saying stupid things, and you kind of have to be quick on your feet. So I think Drew's gotten a lot better over the years. I just want to get that out there. I was a huge Bob Barker fan growing up, but looking back on it, I will say I think Drew Carey gets honestly excited when people win things, especially good things. You can see it. He like hugs them. He's like excited for them. I think Bob Barker, especially towards the end, was just kind of like a mean, crotchety old man. Like, he was not afraid to like scold someone.
Yeah, yeah. He lost some of his charm there. He got angry. He gives a cranky old man.
He's Bob Barker. He can do whatever he wants to. He got bigger than the show. He's the only host it had, at least in the modern time. And I think he probably got a little bit of an ego. And
yeah, he had his controversies, his sexual harassment controversies.
The whole sexual harassment thing. Overall, great guy, though. You got to love Bob Barker.
When we decided to talk about The Price is Right, I was surprised how much nostalgia it elicited for me. You said that you watched the show with your daughter, and I hadn't thought about it, but I realized I watched it every day of kindergarten with my dad. My dad worked second shift, so this was in the mornings we were home, and it was easily the first show, maybe the only show ever, that we watched kind of on equal footing and enjoyed equally and could talk about kind of in a real way. Yeah. And I understood it enough and he enjoyed it. We both watched it on its own merits and I remember that very, very fondly.
A lot of its success is stemmed the fact that it stayed very true to itself, to its roots. It's changed remarkably little over the years. Some of the pricing games have been retired and there have been some new ones. There are currently, according to the internet, 75 pricing games, which seems about right to me. They have some games now that are a little more intricate than I would like to see, and I've heard some some criticism on the internet. Rat Race is one that gets criticized a lot. I don't know if you've been lucky enough to see
Rat Race. No, tell me about Rat Race. I don't know Rat Race.
It's a pretty big set. It's a very elaborate kind of game compared to what you're used to with just kind of guessing prices. And there are five colored rats on like these tracks, like kind of robotic rats. And it's like a racetrack. The guest has to win rats by guessing prizes, like the price within a certain range, like a normal game. And they get to pick their color of rat. So they can win up to three of the five rats. And then there are three prizes, one of which is kind of crappy. One's kind of in the middle. And then the best prize is usually a car. So if you win all three rats, you have a 3 in 5 chance of winning the car. Or you could win all three prizes. If you get one rat, you're kind of hoping that rat wins the race. If it finishes second or third, you get the other prizes. So once they determine how many rats they get, Drew Carey says, start the rat race, and the rats electronically like race around, and you see who wins.
Randomized winner, I assume.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Randomized, I'm assuming predetermined. I don't know how it works exactly, but it's pretty intricate for kind of what the show is. Even Plinko, it's a big set, but you're just dropping a chip down and like watching it fall into a slot. This is kind of a little over the top for a lot of people, and I agree.
Well, it's interesting. As you're describing Rat Race, I kept saying to myself, well, that's not... I don't like it because it's an element of randomness, despite the skill of the contestant. But then you mentioned Plinko in the next sentence, which was one of my favorites and everyone's favorite.
Yeah, everybody loves
and
Plinko.
That is randomness, but there's an illusion of skill. There's such an illusion of skill there that somehow it gets a pass on its randomness.
The big wheel that they spin twice a show trying to get a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's very, very slick, or as I call it, oiled up.
Mm.
And they don't spin it very fast, but it just goes and goes and goes. And other times I've noticed it's very tight. Like,
yeah.
They'll spin it, like a big guy will go up there and spin it really hard, and it only goes around like 4 times. So I don't know what kind of calibration is going on in the wheel. I'm positive they're not like fixing it or trying to manipulate it. I just think they like oil it or something.
It might get oiled up every so often. Yeah.
I'd be really interested to like hear like what goes on with the wheel.
Who are the engineers on the show and how close attention they pay to that? Or maybe they don't pay that much attention at all. It's just a guy oils it every so often and that's it. It's just another piece of machinery. I watched an episode in preparation for this podcast and I was very surprised at how excited I got and how wrapped up I got into the energy of it. The people who get picked from the crowd get so excited and like they truly can't believe it's them, which is kind of shocking because it's not a huge crowd. As a kid, I thought it was a huge crowd, but objectively, it's a couple hundred people, which means if you're in the studio, your odds of getting picked, while not excellent and still surprising, they're not earth-shattering. To their credit, I think they're even more excited about just being on the show. I think most people in that audience are fanatics. And to that point, I would actually be afraid to sit in the audience of the show because if I got picked, I'd be outclassed. I don't know the strategy. I don't know the games. And I'd look like an idiot.
You wouldn't be excited. You'd just kind of walk.
I would freak out because the people who get picked, they know what they're doing. And I would be so outclassed because I don't watch. Well, you're really the expert, and I'm going to defer to you on the final opinion on, you know, the state of The Price is Right in this new era. But for what it's worth, I'm going to say, as I've already said, I think Drew Carey is actually a fine successor. I think the skill of Drew Carey is actually letting the show be the star. I think he's clever and he's witty, but I don't think he's trying to bring too much personality to it. He really lets the contestant be the star and the game be the star. And I think that's very noble of him. He's a stand-up. He's a funny guy, but he doesn't really throw that many jokes out. You know, Bob Barker, I feel like his ego, he did a lot of Bob Barker things, letting the ladies reach into his pocket to get a $100 bill or whatever it was. For its time, charming enough. The other big modern day innovation that I noticed was the male model, which I think is excellent. And I just as a, I don't know, I guess I'm a bit of a, you know, modern guy or whatever. But the thing I liked about it was that I enjoyed the show and I enjoyed the model just as much with it being a male, which made me feel like convinced that I liked the show for its merits, that I'm not some kind of perv.
Well, the whole concept of a game show model is ridiculous.
Exactly.
If you think of it.
And when you see the women smiling ridiculously, seeing a guy smile and wave his arm ridiculously, it really does even the playing field and it doesn't try to pretend, you know, you don't have to look at it and say, am I enjoying this because it's a pretty lady or am I enjoying it because it's super silly?
Right.
And it's the second. The second reason is why I enjoy it so much, and it should be equal opportunity. I think the guy, whatever his name is, did a great job. For, you know, all he does is smile and wave his arm, as does the ladies, and they're great. They're great. It really adds some kitsch to the show, male or female. Love it. Loved it, loved it, loved it.
I think we could do a whole episode on models, game show models, now that I think about it, because I just said they're ridiculous, but now that I think about it, I don't know, if they just open a curtain and there's like a stove and like a dinette set, like, and there's nobody there, like, it's not that exciting.
Yeah, you know what? No, they really do. They add a lot to it somehow. I don't know why or how. And I'd also be willing to guess it's harder than it looks. I don't know. I mean, if I did it, I'd look like a complete idiot. They're kind of convincing.
Hungry Dads. Visit our website at hungrydads.com. Follow us on Twitter at hungry_dads. This has been a Hungry Dads production.
Hi, Super Nintendo Chalmers.
If you've got a big thirst and you're gay, reach for a cold, tall bottle of Schmidt's Gay.
Bob Barker reminding you, help control the pet population. Have your pets bathed or neutered. Good night, everybody.